Jon Stewart is back in the host chair at The Daily Show, which means he's also back in our ears on The Daily Show Ears Edition podcast. The Daily Show podcast has everything you need to stay on top of today's news and pop culture. You get hilarious, satirical takes on entertainment, politics, sports, and more from Jon and the team of correspondents and contributors. The podcast also has content you can't get anywhere else, like extended interviews and a roundup of the weekly headlines. Listen to The Daily Show, Ears Edition, wherever you get your podcasts.
The spread of misinformation has fueled our cultural divide and increased our collective anxiety about the future. Tackling misinformation isn't a simple task, but it's important. And that's why I'm so excited to tell you about Conspirituality, a podcast that's dismantling New Age cults, wellness grifters, and conspiracy mad yogis.
On the show, a journalist, a cult researcher, and a philosophical skeptic walk into a bar, and the bartender says, no, it's not that old joke. They dive deep into current events such as RFK Jr.'s involvement in mainstreaming dangerous anti-vax rhetoric. They crowdsource, research, analyze, and dream up answers to the problem with, get this, proven science as their ultimate guiding light.
I highly recommend you check out Conspirituality's fascinating episodes on creating comedy in the MAGAverse with Jordan Klepper or RFK Jr. flirting with body fascism.
And you've listened to a bunch of them at this point, Paul, I know, and you tell me you love it.
I do. They're fascinating, and my favorite part is they use, wait for it, proven science.
And
if there's any kids listening, that's a class we used to take. Proven science as their ultimate guiding light. I love that.
From exploring cults to analyzing our cultural and political landscape, the Conspirituality podcast will help you stay informed about misinformation and help you resist fear tactics. Find Conspirituality on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. All righty, everybody. Welcome to Nobody Listens to Paula Poundstone. It's the comedy podcast with advice on everything important in life if you'd only listen. I'm Adam Felber. I'm the adult in the room. And please welcome the woman with 1,000 life hacks that everyone ignores, Paula Poundstone. Yeah. Okay. Well, welcome, Paula.
The band is fantastic tonight.
We have a great band tonight. Thank you, trombonist John Grab, for playing her on. In addition to John, we have a sports psychologist, Mario Soto, here to tell us how to get out of your own way and find success, and grammarian Melissa Branzell to advise us on punctuation and proper usage. Also, Paula and I watched Mission Impossible 5 Rogue Nation so that we could tell you today whether you should shell out your money for Mission Impossible 6. Fallout. Welcome all. Paula, what advice do you have to kick things off for us this week?
You know what? When my kids were little and they would be on some kind of medication, when I got up in the morning, I would tape the meds to my shirt so that...
Did that work for you?
I felt great.
Wait, so you wouldn't sleep with meds on your shirt?
No, people don't realize how much medication that you can take in through a sweater, through your skin. No, it was because I had a tendency to forget things. And if it was taped to my shirt, then somewhere between my house and the school, someone was going to say, what's that on your shirt?
Oh, my God.
And I would go, oh, hold on, Thomas, come here. And then I would give him whatever.
This is for reals.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So is that your advice, that people should tape medicine to their shirt?
Yeah. Because, you know, especially in the morning in a house getting ready for school and getting ready for work and the craziness that goes on, you don't want to forget your kid's meds.
Yeah, but if you're remembering to tape it to your shirt, why don't you just give them the medicine?
Because sometimes I was up long before the children were.
Oh, and you didn't want to wake them.
Right, exactly. I was preparing for the day. That's the adult's job, is to prepare
that
for the day.
Does not sound like good advice.
And then...
any of this is true.
Yeah, a lot of the... pill from sweaters eventually up in my son's bowel, and that was a problem that I hadn't anticipated. But no, I did.
Removing
and also,
sweater.
If I had stuff to do myself, I would often tape a list of what I had to do. Or if there were bills that I needed to get in the mail that day.
Oh, so that when you got to school, somebody would look at your chest and go like, hey, Paula, looks like you haven't paid your bills yet.
Yeah, exactly.
And you'd be like, oh, yeah, right.
Yeah.
And write a check.
A lot of people go, that's why your phone's not working.
That makes sense. That's completely nonsensical. Yeah. All right. Well, Paula, you've been a fount of wisdom, but unfortunately, as we've said, nobody listens to Paula Poundstone. Oh, that's delightful. I don't know why we haven't had a trombone up until now. Okay, let's move on to our first segment. Paula, you are an athlete.
Well.
You play ping pong.
I play ping pong.
Right.
Yeah.
Now, and you play very well. You have a wicked serve.
Thank you.
Now, do you have any advice for athletes about the mental part of the game? Like, any advice on sports psychology? What do you got to know to have that competitive edge that I've seen you have?
Well, I'll tell you something. Last week, I had a bunch of people over to play ping pong. And one of the things that I did midway through one of the highly competitive games was I pulled up my underwear, and I wear a thick high-waisted cottony brief.
You sure do.
And this particular pair was tie-dyed, and it was a gift from an audience member, and it's particularly thick. And I pulled it up, and I tucked it underneath my sports bra and showed the other players how it could be like a onesie. And
I'm going to lose any ping pong game I play with you after you've done that.
I cleaned up after that.
Yeah,
there was no amount of backspin that anybody could do. I have no backhand.
Right.
People were serving to my no backhand. Didn't matter. They could barely get the ball over the net.
That's a very particular strategy. I'm not sure it's going to work for everybody for our next guest, but it's clearly worked for you. All right, let's get ready. John Grab, I want you to give us some sports music in just a second because it's time to welcome renowned sports psychologist, Mario Soto, to our podcast.
Hey, Mario.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Okay, well, that's sports music for
a sporting
family of monsters and misfits.
Now, what is sports psychology? Because I think of it as where you might play a sport with your shrink, which is why so often in a sports psychologist's waiting room, you can hear, go along, Dr. Friedman, on the other side of the door. That's...
Great question. No, it's not. It's not that.
No, it's not. And
it's not a great question.
No.
But that was very encouraging of you. I can see how you do your work already.
Yeah, it was a great question.
It was not a great question.
Come on, sports psychology.
It wasn't even a question. It was more about you being funny and then giving him nothing to
it
say.
It was a great question. It was phenomenal.
See, he's doing
Thank
his work
you.
Right here.
Yeah.
My work is in the environment of the athlete. So rather than coming to an office and sitting on a couch like most therapists do, I'm actually immersed in finding out and watching what you do, how you do it. And if you're coming to me, chances are there's already some kind of
You've got
barrier.
The hips of some kind.
I've got a sophomore who has a full ride to a major university who's right now dealing with the yips.
Now, is this a sophomore pitcher?
She is a catcher, believe it or not.
What
and
are
she's
the
struggling
yips?
Just getting it back.
What are the yips?
It's when you hesitate and you overthink and you can't get the ball out of your hand and get it to either the catcher or the second baseman.
Well, that's ridiculous.
Oh, it happens all the time.
It does.
You can't get the ball out of your hand?
Because you're overthinking. You're trying to be perfect and you're trying to hit.
And so you overthrow or you underthrow.
Or you don't throw and you hesitate.
What I don't understand, though, in terms of the girl that you said, she made it this far. She got a scholarship.
Oh,
so she's been throwing the ball in front of people before.
And in that sport, in high school, to get a full ride is rare for baseball or softball. You typically get a small partial.
So
she's
great.
That good. No,
she's really good.
She's a future Olympian.
Now, are you helping? I mean, or are you just...
Well, I'd like to think I am.
Well, how are her yips?
It's fascinating because sometimes the work can be very collaborative and creative or require creativity. And one of the things I asked her to do, and I asked the parents, because a lot of times the parents are part of the problem.
Oh, I would think that one of the things you asked her to do is throw the ball.
Let the ball go.
Yeah.
But to remove that pressure off of her, don't be perfect. Just play.
Right.
You know, it's one of the few games where they say, play the game. Play ball. And yet we get so uber competitive that we get caught up in how we need to do it instead of just doing it.
Uh-huh.
And with that freedom comes creativity. When you have creativity, you have spontaneity and you can adapt and adjust in the moment. When you are locked in thinking I've got to do it like this, that's typically where you start seeing an impact on somebody's performance.
Now, you've helped thousands of athletes right around the world.
Yes.
And so So you know this stuff. So I want to talk specifically about maintaining a positive attitude. That has to be a big part of it.
Everything.
Because we were talking about our theme songs, and I asked Paula what her personal theme song was, and she sang, I think, to the Battle Hymn of the Republic or something like, "I suck, I suck, I suck, I suck, I suck."
Yeah, yeah. And look how far I've gotten.
Yeah. So this is a podcast, mister. I guess what I'm asking, that's right. You made it all the way to a podcast. I guess what I'm asking is repeating to yourself, I suck, a good mantra for a competitor?
No, it's not.
It's not.
Because the voices in your head are the most critical ones.
Right.
Yeah.
So if you're not your own cheerleader...
One of the voices in my head speaks a different language.
Do you speak that language?
No, but I've been using that Babbel app trying to understand. No, I have a Farsi voice in my head.
A Farsi voice?
Yeah.
Are you sure? Because you don't speak Farsi. How would you know?
I can curse in Farsi.
Okay. Well, yeah. So occasionally you hear the word suck in Farsi.
Get hard. Yeah.
So that's not a positive thing. So is there an exercise that you could right now maybe show Paula Poundstone on how to increase her self-esteem?
Well, wow, where do we start? Yes.
Yes.
Okay. First, like simplest
even
one.
I delay starting the show as long as I possibly can because, I do feel a little stress.
Really?
Yeah.
And then once you get in it, you're feeling good.
No.
All right.
No, but that is a great idea.
Yeah. Feeling good while doing your job.
So you were trying to just shirk your responsibility entirely there. You were just trying to go, once you get started, you feel good. Yeah.
Do you guys want to be alone?
Let the man give you some advice. He's going to help.
So make sure you pay attention to the things you say because they're going to feed your subconscious. Mm. And if it's positive, you're more likely to believe and buy in, even if you got to fake it. Because a lot of athletes are faking it. And in the game of baseball or in the game where you're competing at somebody else, it's a game of chicken. And it's about who blinks first.
Uh-huh.
So they're just as nervous as you are.
Yeah.
And it's about breathing. It's about trusting. And then just...
Well, when you say trusting, who are you trusting?
Yourself.
Oh, Jesus.
Can she try trusting like you or me at first?
Or if not, the team, your inner circle.
If it's a team sport,
If it's a team sport.
I have a combination safe for my money at home. I have to hide the combination from myself. There's no trust there.
Well, that's something. I mean, like, understand if it's good for you that Paula's not an athlete because this would be a hard case to start working
with. You just said I was an athlete only minutes ago.
I was trying to be flattering. You're the host.
Thank you.
The irony is performance doesn't have to be just about sport.
Right.
It could be about this.
Have you helped actors and comedians?
I have helped actors, comedians. I work with several businessmen, executives. So it's about. We got a trombonist who looks like he's asking for my help. It is all about getting out of your own way.
Right, getting out of your own way.
And in some cases, just being good with the work you're putting in and not having that critical voice of judgment in the back of your head. Because, again, that voice...
But you need that voice afterwards, right?
You want a healthy voice if you're debriefing. And one of the things I tell athletes is, I don't want you to beat yourself up. Right. If you're a perfectionist, you've probably already done that before you come off the stage.
Unless you're a professional self-beater.
Yeah, right.
Which then you're probably seeing me and taking drugs.
Right.
Yeah.
Which is not a good thing. But I want you to debrief and don't put emotion in it. Remove the emotion and then ask yourself, what did I do well? Because most of the time, what happens when we come off stage, when you come away from performance, God, I sucked. God, I did this bad or I did this bad. And with parents, that's, especially in today's uber competitive society, they're identifying as soon as they come into the car. Why didn't you do this, Billy? Why didn't you do that, Billy? You were so much better than that. Well, they're already beating themselves up. They don't need your help.
Wow.
And I tell them, don't make the worst part of the day the drive home.
Yeah.
And that's really critical in today's society.
I have to give myself one point. I never did that to my kids. When they did sports. Never. Not even
always
once.
Really encouraging?
I think I was. Didn't help, but I think I was.
Well, did you tell them what they did well? Did you just not want to talk about it?
No, we just drove home in silence. It was so awkward.
But sometimes that's good.
Yeah. No, I remember one time saying to my son, boy, you were throwing that ball so good out there today. But unfortunately, it was a gymnastics meet.
Oh. Yeah, you weren't paying attention.
Yeah. Well, yeah. So I don't think he was supposed to be throwing the ball.
Right.
Yeah.
But you were encouraging about it.
So I said, man, you got in some good hits.
Good hits.
And and it was a girls' gymnastics meet. Wow. So, not so much.
All kidding aside, in today's world, 70% of kids, by the time they hit 13 or 14, they're burnt out.
Really?
They want to quit.
Wow.
And it's because of the amount of pressure that parents or bad coaches are putting on these people.
Yeah.
So if we're going to be part of the solution, we need to think differently. We need to parent differently. So we need for them to not only believe in themselves and have that cheerleading voice, but then we need, because we're part of that inner circle of influence, we need to validate that same message.
So now this might be a little bit unethical, but as a fan of the New York Yankees, can you kind of put the hoodoo on the Astros for next season, if you don't mind? Like, do you ever do that? Do you ever get an offer for, like, can you kind of mess with these people's heads so that the other team could win? Like, is there like a reverse sports psychology?
What makes
Absolutely.
You think that's unethical?
Absolutely.
I mean,
there's nothing unethical about
psychology?
It because here's fascinating. You've got two teams that are competing.
Right.
And there are times when I've actually had to work with both teams, or I'm working with both teams.
Really? And who are you betting on?
The one who shows up that day and gets into the other person's head sooner.
Oh, wow.
So there's a game within the game. And I love sports, but now I'm, because of my work, I'm looking now through a different lens. I'm watching the game through to see who's going to crack first,
right?
Who's showing their cards, revealing their cards, and how long they're going to sustain that emotional moment until, and then fix it.
So you can tell, can you kind of tell who's going to win the game earlier than most people can?
I can have some good indicators, but, you know, sometimes it's a crapshoot.
You can't tell who's going to win the game before the others?
You can get a pretty good feel.
If it's 10-2, then you could go, I think the team that has 10 is going to win.
The beauty about...
Well, that's probably right.
Yeah.
The beauty about college sports is it's still very emotional.
Yeah.
Pro sports, until you get to the championship level and playoffs...
It's just a job.
It's a job.
It's mechanical.
Yeah.
It is.
They're just out there. They're not letting go of the ball. All right. So I was on Wait, Don't Tell Me, I don't know, a little while ago, and I forget what made me refer to this, but... I said something to the effect of that I was watching the 2014 Winter Olympics. I was watching the women's cross-country skiing. And by the way, it was boring because the camera's in one place and they go by.
Yes.
And the Americans, you know, all the Nordics win because that's how they go get their bread. That's they grew up doing that. And I said the American team was like way the hell back texting each other. And apparently this irked some supporters,
some of our proud athletes. Yeah.
Well, actually, I have to say they were very, they were sort of faux-irked.
Okay.
They were furked. So they sent me a video of them training, and it was actually kind of great. It was them doing like calisthenics and stuff, but they all had their phones out while they were doing it. And I guess somewhere on our Twitter conversation that we had over time, I challenged them to a
cross-country
ski race.
And so that's why we brought you here, Mario. Now what?
Yeah.
Oh, shit.
Yeah. Yeah. So, okay. Mario, how do I get into their heads?
I think you keep doing what you're doing and talk to them throughout the entire race.
Talk to them throughout the entire
Absolutely.
Race?
Absolutely.
Really?
And then... You know, a little elbow here and a little nudge
I have a
there.
Bad feeling that they're not going to be close enough to me to hear me talking to them. Yeah. I'm going to have to say, hey, you come back here.
Well, you could put an amplifier on your chest.
I'm talking to you.
Yeah.
Yeah. I have some negative things to say to you if you'll just turn around.
There you go. There you go. Yeah. Play the mind. Play the ultimate mind game.
Yeah. Yeah. And there I'll be way in the back. Like, I think I can. I think I can. I'm not really sure that all this, you know, the problem for me is, like, if I try to use a lot of positive self-talk, I'm not an idiot. And so I'm often...
You don't think you can fool you.
It's exactly right. Well, I can't
now,
fool me.
If I was
me.
Hearing Mario correctly, it doesn't matter if you don't fool you.
Really? You just say it anyways?
You say it anyways. Am I right, Mario?
There's a lot of truth to what you just said.
Well, that's ridiculous.
Well, it's also... it also helps to know what you're doing.
Yeah.
And that you put your attention on what will serve you as opposed to putting your attention on what isn't helping you.
Yeah,
and what will serve nothing me. That you do in the arena of cross-country skiing is going to help you.
Yeah, yeah, I can't imagine that anything really would.
No.
I don't think I ever, I've downhill skied before, but I don't think I've ever cross-country skied before because I never saw a reason to.
Right.
You know, yeah. Don't you just go across like mostly flat?
Yeah. Well, no, you go up and down.
Oh, do you go up and down?
Yeah, there's hills to climb.
Are there?
Yeah.
You climb a hill?
You climb a hill.
Oh, that's
You have
absurd.
To turn your skis out and make sort of this herringbone shape.
And yeah, and then you climb the hill.
Yeah.
And then, but it can't, it's not like a mountain, because nobody climbs a mountain on cross-country
skis. You're not going to be able to do it.
Unless you have your why. You know, if you have a strong reason to do it, then you just might surprise yourself.
Oh, strong reason
but
to do
that's
it.
That's encouraging.
You but if you don't have a why, stay home.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Here's my why. Yeah. Oh, so you have to have a, So you have to be like, do you have to like lie to yourself about that? Do you have to say to yourself like, bringing a live heart to someone for a heart transplant and I have to make a herringbone up this hill in order to do so? Is that?
It might help.
That would be a strong why.
Yeah.
Also the strong third act of an action movie.
Yeah. Well, you know, one thing I could do is as the girls go by me, I could hoist my thick
hoist your
cottony
thick
high-waisted brief and show them how if you tuck it into your sports bra.
It's worth a shot.
Yeah.
All right. So we're gonna.
I think that'll make Sports Illustrated.
Oh, no, or Sports Please Don't Illustrate It. So, Paula, now that you've had time to absorb and synthesize all the lessons that Mario's given you, can you give our listeners, like, your advice on how to be the best you can be at your sport?
Absolutely.
Jesus fucks.
Get ready for the miracle of mega. A comedy podcast from the staff of a fictional mega church.
And not only does he fuck, but he's the best at it.
I'm Holly Loren.
And I'm Greg Hess.
Our characters, Hallie and Gray, welcome a new guest each week, played by some of the biggest names in comedy and podcasting.
Like Scott Aukerman, Lauren Lapkus, Paul Scheer, Jason Mantzoukas, Cecily Strong, and Duncan Trussell.
I just love to think about that, the light shining down on all those corpses in the water and Noah just going by and maybe a mom being like, please, we're running out of energy. Can you please let us on the boat?
It's completely improvised and it's devilishly funny.
Is there any question you have for us about, you know, what it means to live a life in Christ?
I guess, how much do you think is bullshit?
There's a new episode every Sunday.
Listen and subscribe to Mega, wherever you get your podcasts.
Best I ever had. Best I... Y'all could do it. Y'all could do it. Y'all sing along. You know what I'm saying? Here go. Jesus, you the best.
Jesus, you're the best.
You to be the best.
Jesus, you're
Jesus,
the best.
You the best. Okay,
best
never mind.
Best I ever had. Best wow. I ever had.
A detective came and knocked on the door, and I said, is it Renee? And he just gave me that solemn look.
It was the worst day ever.
The Proof Podcast is back with a new case and a new season. 23 years ago, 18-year-old Renee Ramos went missing. Her body was later found in an empty Home Depot building on the edge of town.
I don't think that they arrested the right people. It's about time somebody's trying to do something.
She had a black eye about 2 weeks before she was murdered.
They are involved. They definitely had her body and her backpack.
You know people are going to judge you, right?
Of course. They're judging me now. They've been judging me damn near my whole life.
You can listen now to season 2 of Proof, wherever you get your podcasts, and follow along with us as we reinvestigate the murder at the warehouse.
I have to ask, did you kill Renee?
Hey, listener, it's Zach Harper, Amin El-Hassan, and Anthony Mays of Cinephobe. You may be asking yourself, what is Cinephobe? Amin, would you like to fill in the people?
Cinephobe is the podcast where Zach and I watch movies that are poorly rated on Rotten Tomatoes and try to ascertain.
All we're trying to ascertain?
Yes.
Okay.
Ascertain. Whether or not they're accurately poorly rated, or maybe they didn't get a fair shake. Cinephobe, produced by this guy, Anthony Mays.
Hey, that's me. I produced this show. I also watch the movies, even though that wasn't included in the description, and I also ascertain. This month is...
Whoa!
Oh, Maze, why'd you say that? Supercharge it. So that this promo can remain evergreen.
I feel like explaining a little bit more.
In 60 seconds?
I don't know. Maybe I don't bring attention to it. Assuring people like, look, if you listen, you're going to get it. Just give it time.
That's a good promo. Just listen to it.
Give it time.
You'll figure it out.
Is this the promo right now?
Isn't it? Okay, I think we got it.
Cinefo.
Wherever you get podcasts.
John, can I get a little music underneath this? Well, thank you so much, sports psychologist Mario Soto. If I understood your advice correctly, in anything you're trying to achieve, it's important to get out of your own way. Focus on what you're doing well. Use positive self-talk. In other words, lie to yourself. And most important, have your parents drive your opponents home.
All right, Mario Brilliant. Soto. Mario Soto is a sports psychology consultant. He holds a master's degree in sports and performance psychology consulting from California State University, Fullerton. Mario, thank you so much for joining us.
My pleasure. Thank you, guys.
Thanks very much, Mario.
Thank you, trombonist John Grab. Okay, so now we're going to move on from sports to language and find out how to do good, better grammar. Do grammar better good. We have writer, editor, and grammar expert, grammarian, if you will, Melissa Branzell. Welcome to the show.
Nice intro. Thanks. It's great to be here.
Melissa, now, if you saw our script, and we didn't give you a copy, I don't think, but you would have noted that we omitted the Oxford comma between writer, editor, and grammar expert.
Mm.
Your thoughts?
You know, I'm okay with that, actually. I'm not a big fan of the Oxford comma. Personally.
What? Really?
First of all, wait a minute. Yeah. Back up.
All right.
What is the Oxford comma?
That's an excellent question. It is the comma that comes before and in a series. So you have,
like, when you're making a list of stuff.
When you're making a list. So you have ice cream, comma, cake, comma, and cookies.
So each one of those is an Oxford comma?
No, just the last one.
Oh, the last one.
The one before
the last one.
The Oxford comma was just a kind of a big shoe.
That would be an Oxford shoe.
Yeah. I thought it was just a comma that wore a clunky shoe.
It's also called the cereal comma. Serial like serial killer, not serial like.
Did they change? Because I could swear that the rule used to be that you don't put a comma before the and.
It's tricky because there are actually two camps.
Oxford and Cambridge?
Yeah.
Guessing.
So there's one style school best represented by the style bible of the publishing industry called the Chicago Manual of Style. They are in favor of the Oxford comma or the serial comma. Then there are those who use the Associated Press style book, used by newspapers generally and some magazines, and they do not use the Oxford comma.
Now, why are you on their side?
I'm on the side of whoever pays me, basically.
Oh, okay.
That's how it works.
Wow.
It's hard to think of the Associated Press and style in the same breath, because I don't think of them as really good dressers.
Again, you're
not
reverting
the right,
to shoes it, and clothes
yeah,
and
not
stuff.
The right thing.
Not
okay.
the right thing at all.
Right. So I have to switch back and forth depending
okay.
on whether
I like
I'm working for a book,
comma.
A magazine, a newspaper. I like it at times when it helps provide clarity. Sometimes it does if you're
sometimes
going on and on and this and this and this. And sometimes you need to group things together and the comma helps for clarity.
All right.
Oh, I like clarity.
So
I have to just tell you one thing, and it is important.
You're looking at me like I'm going to say that this was irrelevant.
Yeah, no, because I had that negative voice in my head.
Uh-huh.
My negative voice looks like Adam.
Yeah.
and it was going to say.
And frequently those negative voices come from me entirely.
Yeah, it was going to say, well, that's not germane, but it is.
Okay.
When my son Thomas was in the fourth grade, I believe it was, I dressed up like a comma one day and went to his elementary school.
And?
I just thought that was important. What do you mean, and? I'm talking to a grammarian, and I'm telling her that I dressed up like a comma once.
Right, and you said comma, and I said and. I turned you into an Oxford comma. Okay, I'm gonna go ahead and say that was definitely on the topic we're talking about.
Thank you, Adam.
Does not go a long way towards us talking to Melissa about punctuation and grammar.
I wanted her to like me.
Okay.
I do like you, Paula. I like you even more now that I know that you dressed up as a comma.
Thank you very
much. I have a
much
deeper respect for you now.
Thank you, comma Melissa.
Okay. That is the,
see,
yeah, okay.
She knows how she should be used.
That's right. So when did you, Melissa, first notice like good grammar and bad grammar and that there was such a thing?
Mm. Well, my mom taught me phonetics at a very early age. I was probably 12 months or something when she started working with me on letters and spelling and word games and stuff like
wow.
that. So I always liked that kind of thing. And then I grew up watching Electric Company and Schoolhouse Rock and Sesame Street.
I love those things.
Yes.
Great shows. And I was a huge Sesame Street fan. And one of my favorite characters was Cookie Monster, who who doesn't love Cookie Monster?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
But Cookie Monster's grammar is just atrocious.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah. He leaves out a lot of articles.
Me want cookies.
Me want cookies.
Me go over there. Me find more cookie.
Yeah. So I was a little concerned about this. And my dad was actually so concerned that Cookie Monster might be a bad influence on my grammar that he wrote a letter to the Children's Television Workshop. And someone from the Children's Television Workshop wrote him back and said, we understand, but we created Cookie Monster because we wanted to create a character that we felt the kids could relate to, someone who could speak to them on their level, that they would feel was their friend instead of someone just talking and preaching at them. And I thought, okay, yeah, well, it still sounds wrong to me.
Right.
Let me ask your dad just one question. Has he ever met a kid or an adult who talks like Cookie Monster? Has he ever met anybody like at a party or family reunion who goes, me want cookie? And he goes, there, see what happens?
I guess he was being a little overly concerned.
I think there are those types of grammarians, by the way, and that are a little, it's not that.
You're trying not to say stickler.
It's something like stickler.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Like, I'm just not sure that's the best investment of time.
Do you consider yourself a stickler, Melissa? Or are you just someone who is righting the wrongs of a society that has let grammar and punctuation go the way of the dodo?
Wow, that was quite a sentence.
I almost didn't get through it.
I
ran out of breath halfway through.
Yeah. Well, thank God I have this oxygen machine here. And I was able to help Adam.
I think I need to edit that sentence a bit. But I would say the latter. I would say I'm not a stickler in the way of some copy editors I've met who are very particular about every single thing. The English language has some fluidity, and we have some choices that
so
we can make about
style. So if I were
to
dangle a participle right now.
Wow.
How long before you would go nuts? You know what? I don't even know what a dangling participle is, by the way. What's a participle?
Well, I think if you have a dangling participle, I think you really should see a dermatologist to have it removed.
I was thinking dangling participles was more like a trapeze troupe.
Sort of. Not. It's a dangling participle is a phrase that normally begins a sentence, and it doesn't match the subject of the sentence that is coming after it. So an example would be walking through the city streets, the taxi cabs honked loudly.
Because those taxi cabs were not walking through the city streets.
That's correct.
Uh-huh.
So it is dangling there at the beginning because it's not properly attached to
so
the right subject.
It would dangle at the beginning and not dangle at the end?
Usually comes at the beginning.
Really?
You dangle at the end, you get arrested. It's happened to me.
You don't want trouble.
Yeah.
In this neighborhood, there's a lot of that.
So what are your pet peeves? Like, what burns you up when you see somebody committing some sort of language or punctuation offense?
Well, there's a lot of misuse of the apostrophe.
Oh, Jesus.
That one bugs me.
And, you know, I'm not the only one. It bugs a lot of people. There's actually a group called the Apostrophe Protection Society.
Okay, wow. Well, this is what I'm saying about people and their time. You know, the lights are not on in Puerto Rico right now. I just think the idea, and they probably have T-shirts and business cards and meetings. I just think that's not the best use of any society's time.
All right,
the Apostrophe Protection Society, is that what it was called?
Yeah. They're based in the UK. Just trying to make sure.
My guess is they don't get along with a lot of groups.
Maybe not. But you know what?
Nobody's calling them up saying, let's go throw a ball this weekend. Nobody's saying, let's go run a 5K.
Because if they just spelled let's without the apostrophe, they wouldn't be going
exactly,
anywhere.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
But
don't even joke about that.
Okay. So,
So
what apostrophe usages tick you off? Is it people not using the apostrophe for its or using it when they shouldn't be?
Oh, I see that all the time.
Sure.
That's a very, very common one.
You see it. Where do you see it?
I see it in the books, magazines, websites, and so on that I edit for a living.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So that's a common mistake. And if it can be said as it is, then you have an apostrophe. If it can't, then there's no apostrophe. So that's the simple rule for that one.
You know, I have a question that troubled me for years.
This whole thing is troubling me.
Okay. If you're doing a quote of what someone said, but they didn't say a question, but you're asking if they said it. So, for example, did she say, comma, quotation mark, shut up?
Oh, that's a good question.
The question mark inside the quotation, because I always heard the punctuation goes inside the quotation marks.
The question mark goes outside the quotation marks. But if you're asking the question and the question's not part of the quote, then you would put the question mark outside of the quotes.
Okay, really what about if the person was asking a question, but I'm asking if they asked that question?
Two question marks, one inside and one out?
So I say, wait a minute, did she say, where the hell did you put that comma? How would you punctuate that?
In that case, you don't need two question marks. You can just have one inside the quotation
marks. But then
you don't
know.
You don't need another separate one.
Really?
It depends on whether you're asking the question or whether the person, the material that's quoted contains the question.
Okay, let's move on to maybe the modern age, Paula, if that's okay with you?
Sure.
Are there particular challenges that are driving you nuts now or driving people nuts now involving, and Paula's going to love this, technology? Does the digital era present some special challenges to the world of spelling and grammar?
It does. I think
it's ruining everything. Is that correct?
It is ruining everything. I agree with that.
Yeah. Exclamation point.
Yes, exclamation point. I've definitely seen in the last 10 years people's writing skills declining rapidly.
Really?
But people, the irony is they're writing. You know, everybody thinks they're writing because they're texting and they're emailing. So everybody thinks they're writing.
Yeah.
People think they write more than they used to write.
They do.
Yeah, but they're not. They're abbreviating. They're dashing off sentences. They're certainly not proofreading what they just wrote.
Right.
There's autocorrect. So
which
now all of a sudden you're saying something you completely did not intend to say.
And right.
Exactly.
Oh, boy.
So we're getting into all
kinds
of trouble.
By the way, sorry about that. Fuck you, email.
No, you meant fuck you.
No, that was autocorrect. I swear it.
What was it autocorrecting from? Dear Adam, fuck you twice. What is that autocorrect to?
Oh, you got it too because I sent it to Melissa.
Oh, wow. You shouldn't have started it, Dear Adam.
I CC'd you on my fuck you note. I meant fuck ew.
You don't like female sheep.
Correct.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay. Well, I mean, that's plausible. Hmm. Paula, we have now talked to Melissa. We've gotten her advice about grammar.
Yeah.
What can you give us back?
And it was terrific advice. Thank you so much. An apostrophe does not belong to a belongs to it. A participle dangles in front because it's not connected to the rest of the sentence. And did Melissa Branzell, our grammarian, say, where am I, cookie? Question mark, close quote, question mark? If she did, that is correct.
Melissa Branzell is the owner of Media Chick, which provides a range of editorial services for publishing companies and independent authors. Melissa, thank you so much for joining us. It's time now for advice on movie sequels you should maybe not see or maybe see.
That is that's a catchy title.
Yeah, it's a work in progress.
Yeah, we're taking submissions on those.
Yeah, but it is a segment that we feel strongly about. You and I have talked about this. What we're going to do is movie sequels are coming out all the time. So as a public service, Paula and I are going to watch and review the original film to tell you whether or not you should see the sequel. Kind of a genius concept, isn't it?
It is.
Yeah.
It is.
Yeah.
It's going to save the listener so much money.
Because sequels are usually bad, but we can clue you in as to where your money should go. This week, Paula and I got together and viewed at Stately Felber Manor.
Yeah.
Mission Impossible 5, Rogue Nation. Now, the reason we did this is because mere minutes from now, probably, Mission Impossible 6, which is called what? Fallout, yes.
Fallout.
Yeah, just moments. Mission Impossible 6 Fallout is coming out. And so Paula and I thought we would watch Mission Impossible 5, which was really kind of a steep learning curve for Paula because...
I've never seen any of the Mission Impossible. I saw the old, I saw the Peter Graves television show years ago a little bit.
Right.
But I had never seen any of these.
A franchise-spanning...
I keep saying Tom Hanks, but it's not Tom Hanks. It's Tom Cruise.
Tom Cruise, yeah.
Yeah.
Less of an everyman than Tom Hanks.
Yeah. I didn't see any of the early ones. I'm assuming naturally that he looked younger in the earlier ones.
He looked way younger.
Well, this one, and I have no problem with anybody aging, by the way, but this one, he does have that kind of orangey, like the
puffy.
It's the Trump look with the kind of pinkish face and the white eyes, yeah. like somebody did a grave rubbing over.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's got a grave rubbing.
I think that's kind of like a Botox-y kind of thing. Like they
could have been.
Needed to smooth himself out.
And there were scenes in this where, you know, he was captured.
And shirtless.
And shirtless.
Because
and
apparently in movies, that's the first thing that any captor does is take your shirt off. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, they're big on that.
Yeah.
And
But he looks great. I mean, it's ripped. His muscles.
I guess. I thought his nipples were off-putting, frankly. But
off-kilter or off-putting?
Off-putting. There was something about them that was a little bit off-putting.
Did they seem too big?
They looked like Reese's
nipples?
Peanut Butter Cup minis.
Oh.
And, you know, I love candy.
You mean
but
serrated around the edges? Because I did not notice that.
No, they weren't serrated. There was just something about them that at first I was like, oh, those are nipples. So he's tied up, and then the bone doctor, I think, was the name of the character.
Yeah.
Or no, it was the woman who came in, and she had all these syringes.
Right.
And she was about to inject him with
this is early
more,
on in the movie. This
right,
is a terrible
Botox,
review we're offering here.
I think.
Oh, that's
maybe that's how the original Botox got done.
Can I re-rack it a little bit for everybody so that we can talk about this. So Tom Cruise's character, who's Ethan Hunt, right?
Yeah.
He's the Mission Impossible guy, and he works for a secret division of the government, MI something.
Something.
No, IMF. That's not the International Monetary Fund, but the Impossible Mission Force.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah.
And I think everybody
this
knows.
This movie is a cryptographer's dream.
Yeah.
That's right. Will Shorts cut his teeth on this movie.
Yeah. So we so I think everybody's familiar with this. He gets impossible missions and
at the outset
of this movie, he gets called in for a mission, but it turns out, no, it's a betrayal. They try to kill him, they kidnap him, they want information out of him.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I guess there's a big organization called the Syndicate.
The Syndicate,
that for some reason only Tom Cruise, only Ethan Hunt believes in.
Right. The CIA, the head of the CIA was played by
Alec Baldwin,
who you could almost, every time I heard Alec Baldwin, every time he was on the screen, you could imagine him memorizing his lines the night before.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
It was done with, that part was done with all the conviction as the way he narrates Thomas the Tank Engine.
Yeah, you know, yeah. There was sort of
and you know what? I think the intelligence level of the script is commensurate with that.
There was a lot, there were a lot of lines that could have been cut out of any, you know, and people who like those kind of movies, I'm sure, will be more than satisfied. But there was a lot of I'm growing impatient.
Yes.
Which is always what
good people don't grow impatient.
Part of the problem. That's why it's so important to develop your child's patience.
Right.
Because otherwise, they're likely to become
bad guys,
a villain.
But self-aware bad guys. They don't just go off. They know they're growing impatient.
Keep them out of those black turtlenecks.
Oh,
I don't care how cold it gets.
Now
do not let your kid wear a black turtleneck and be impatient.
Now, don't let this put you off.
Because that is super villain right there.
That's absolutely right. Now, Alec Baldwin is not the one wearing the black turtleneck, thank God. But,
no.
But our villain, played by Sean Harris, his name is Solomon Lane.
Yeah.
He looks like they just dressed somebody up to be Michael Myers from this SNL Sprocket sketch. Like, now is the time when Sprocket's very cute the hero.
And I actually think, didn't Cat Stevens wear like a, no, I can't remember, or Chad and Jeremy or something, there was.
Every Folky from the 60s wore
black turtleneck.
And then it became a villain thing. And Folkies are the real villains, so that all matches.
And the other thing they say is, it would be unfortunate.
Yeah, that's a villain
thing
too.
Once they got somebody tied up, they get a lot of syllables going.
Yeah,
it would be unfortunate.
Unfortunate if you were to find yourself without a limb.
Yeah, yeah,
kind of stuff.
Yeah, it's not just like fuck you, I'm hacking you to bits.
Yeah, yeah, no, that'd be better.
It would be unfortunate. You know what? You would think that he would recognize some of the signs of danger. You know,
but no, he still walks right into those traps.
Not only does he walk, but you know, like the opening scene, he ends up hanging off of an airplane and there's an explosion and he falls out of the plane and stuff like that happens.
Right. And he does all his own stunts, which is one of the appealing things about these movies, apparently.
But you know what's weird to me, I think, is so in the next scene, you know, he's up and running and everything's fine. Sometimes he gets up like a little bit like, oh, like that.
Yeah, he's got sort of a gimpy, oh, I've had a few rib smash kind of walk. But by the time he gets into the next frame.
Next scene, he's good to go. Yeah. Now, I got to tell, he seems to not pay any kind of a price is what I'm saying. Now, I stay in a lot of hotels, and I like to bring an extension cord so that I can plug in, you know, the phones and the computer.
I am
and
sure
the junk.
This is going somewhere.
No, this is important.
Yeah.
And so, I was it maybe last week, I had plugged my extension cord in behind a nightstand.
I swear to God, if somebody doesn't hit you with a blow dart by the end of this story,
we're
just editing it out.
No, this is important, and I think the listener will appreciate this. So I was pulling it out when I went to leave. I was pulling the extension cord out, and it sort of, you know, it sprang loose more quickly than I was anticipating.
Uh-huh.
And then my thumb crashed into the back of the dresser. That was a week ago, and I'm still kind of nursing the injury on my thumb. This is what I'm saying.
Paula's thumb.
I wasn't blown out of a plane. I simply scraped my finger on the back of a dresser. It doesn't heal that quickly.
Yeah, you're right.
That's what I'm saying.
Absolutely right.
You know, and
that music the whole time.
That Mission Impossible music, the series is a little old now, and so it's not quick like that anymore. Now it's like dum dum da da. Da 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 da. Yeah.
I think that might be just how you were feeling.
No, it's
this.
Like that now. They're slowing it down.
So, here's something that you don't know. I know
I did
some
planning
research.
On the last one. He's going to be on a walker.
Yeah. No.
No, that's the plan.
No, they're going to keep making him look like he's just young, as vibrant as ever, but he's not.
Shuffle, shuffle, da da.
I wish everybody
shuffle,
out there could see Paula's walker miming.
I am doing a physical gesture right now.
And you're known as a gifted physical comedian.
People think of me as, you know, the pratfalls and that
sort of
thing.
Yeah, absolutely. Pratfalls and props.
I'm a balloon artist.
Yeah, I should tell everybody. Two minutes ago, I just sat here watching Paula try and fail to blow up a balloon.
I didn't fail. I blew it up.
Did you?
Yeah.
All right.
Did you see?
No.
Can you tell what it is?
No. The balloon animal?
Yeah, I made a balloon animal.
Yes,
can you tell?
It looks like a snake that was run over.
No. It's a rice dish.
A rice dish?
Yeah. I can't believe you didn't see that.
I didn't see that.
I think that people could not go to that movie and then just...
See the sequel?
No, don't see the sequel. Okay. No, that's what I'm saying. Don't see the sequel.
We have to move ahead to that part anyway.
Oh.
So now we've massacred the whole idea of reviewing this movie because we've been all
over
the map.
But
here's where we give coherent advice. Paula Poundstone, having seen Rogue Nation, do you think people should see its forthcoming sequel, Fallout?
I would not. I would save my $14 and not... Unless I could go to Adam Felber's and see it in his backyard on a big screen with his dog barking and his cat hanging around. No, I wouldn't do it.
Yeah, you know what? I'm going to have to agree with you on that. I don't think I'd spend my money on that because it'll eventually come out on home video. And I guess if you're a fan of big, giant, splashy stunts, don't listen to Paula Poundstone and go see this movie. But if you want a movie that's going to be unique in any way...
No, it's not a unique movie.
Go elsewhere.
Does that surprise anybody that Mission Impossible... 12 isn't unique.
And also, at this point, shouldn't they be calling it Mission... Kind of possible.
Right, yeah.
Yeah.
Mission, maybe.
Yeah, you think they would have changed their standards as to what impossibility was by the third movie or something.
Yeah, I don't think that's what that word means, right? Isn't that what the guy said in Princess Bride?
Yes, that word. I don't think it means what you think it does.
Yeah.
Yeah. Inconceivable was the word in that.
Yeah. So definitely, I say don't go to it.
All right.
Don't do it.
Don't go to that movie.
And if you do, don't come crying to us.
Okay, as we approach the thrilling conclusion of Nobody Listens to Paula Poundstone, you might be thinking, hey, how can I support these guys? Well, you could do it by becoming a Maximum Fun member.
Now, that sounds like something I would have no idea how to do.
It's really not that complicated because it follows the same sort of model that our listeners who might have been imported over from NPR are used to following. What you do is you go to MaximumFun.org, select a level, and start your membership. It's that simple. And the funds go to support Maximum Fun programming.
Oh, that's .org? I get my .org and my .com and my .edu mixed up.
Well, this is org. This
and my
is .org.
..
And all right, our show is hosted by Paula Poundstone and yours truly, Adam Felber. We're produced by Paula Poundstone, a different Adam Felber, Bonnie Burns, and Ken Lezebnik, along with Liza Forster. Technical direction by Jorge Reyes. Special thanks for tonight's musical guest, John Grab. Snacks for our guests provided by Girl Scouts at my daughter's school, who are selling tag-alongs by the truckload. And we're nothing if not an interactive show, so if you want to get Paula's advice about a specific topic, well, you can just go over to www.paulapoundstone.com and let us know what you want us to let you know.
If we use your idea, we'll give you something. We still have to figure out what, but maybe something of Adam's.
Yes, or something of Paula's.
Maybe something
of Ken's, something or Bonnie's.
Something of Adam's.
Well, I don't know why we're settling on. I don't think we are settling on that. but also, we are involved in a very, very lackadaisical search for a theme song. So if you would like to submit a theme song, also go on over to www.paulapoundstone.com and, I don't know, whistle a happy tune for us.
Yeah. That's our show for tonight. Won't somebody please listen to me?
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.